Yes, thank you, Chair and Commissioners. I'm appearing today in relation to limitation on the size of retail premises to 400 square metres, yet it appears that Mr Heath and Ms Jones, relying on Mr Heath's evidence, has taken a further and suggested limitation of 300 square metres. In the case, I don't believe that there's any jurisdiction to take to 300, there may very well be jurisdiction to take to 400 square metres, and it's that which is the subject of evidence to be given by Mr Colpenhorn in favour of in support of the Trust.
Just while we're discussing matters of scope, I'm just wondering where your client's ability to discuss the size of the operations within the zone arises, given the further submissions were lodged seem to relate only to the area of the that particular site, the height limits imposed and setbacks.
We filed, as I understand, a preliminary submission in support of the zone. There's no doubt.
Well, that's why I'm checking, because we've only got listed the further submission, 1193. There's been another submission that I should be looking at.
In terms of the, obviously we filed a further submission in relation to the Willow Ridge submission. In relation to the one about offices, I would have thought in respect of an issue of scope.
Which was the one in respect of Willow Ridge?
The submission in respect to Willow Ridge?
The further submission in respect to Willow Ridge.
I'm struggling with the numbers, sir, because I'm not sure if I've got actual reference to the numbers.
Yes, well,
thank you. I've got a copy of it, but I haven't got the number. I'll need to get that to you, sorry.
So just looking at the 395 submissions. There's a submission seeking that part of the land be zoned meeting its be residential.
That's correct.
And there's another submission seeking that part of the land be zoned low density residential.
That's correct.
And that's where they stop. Or is it 376 as well? Commissioner Rogers just pointed out there's number three numbers on just the property was. Well, maybe we'll have to look at that in detail later and just check even the front of this is particularly relevant.
But in relation to the, I've got the submission here in relation to the Willow Ridge submission.
Right.
In relation to the one on the 200 square metres, of course, that only came about because there was no submission, so we didn't file any submission on that. It came about in the Section 42A report.
Mm.
So as a party that's got an interest in respect to that matter, one would have thought that it could raise issues in relation to whether it's jurisdiction.
Yes, for such a situation. Case. It's just that the numbers that I've been given, you don't, yes. This must have a different further submission number.
Exactly. So those are the only matters I wish to raise at this point. We've also, of course, got the, there are other matters pertaining to other submissions that have been raised in respect to rules relating to the zone that, per se as well, and that's going to be heard at the time of mapping.
Yes, yes. It seems sensible to deal with that at that stage.
Yes, right.
This matter relates to the entire zone.
Correct.
Yes.
So Mr. Polkenhorn has produced a brief, sir. There was one issue, he may wish to address it. At the time he prepared it, there was a difficulty with access to statistical information because, of course, at that stage, the website for Stats New Zealand was down because of the earthquake, so I'm not sure if there's anything further he wishes to comment in relation to that.
Okay.
I'm happy to answer any questions now or at a later stage.
No. Is it a summary?
Sorry?
Is this possible at a summary?
No, he hasn't. Sorry.
Right. Okay.
Just want to summarize. Sure.
Good afternoon. My name is John Polkinghorn. I've got one or two verifications and corrections to my evidence, which I just want to mention. There's a typo in point 57. And point 57 says that my preferred growth rate for domestic tourism spending is 3%. That should be 2%, sorry.
I missed that 3%.
It's written as 2%, sorry, 3%. It should be 2%.
Right.
Okay. And the only other clarification I've got is that my evidence does refer to an appendix. I put that into the text at the 11th hour, so the map of the Wanaka catchments has been placed into the body of the evidence. And that is after point 86. So that's the catchment of Wanaka that I've used, and that's generally what's been used in these hearings and modelling exercises.
Okay.
And as it happened, the earthquakes, while it did make it a little bit tricky to get hold of the statistical information, I did actually have everything I needed. I did mention at one point that I didn't have more up-to-date figures for tourism spending on Clune, but as it happens, we're running 10 MY2 figures anyway. So I'm happy to summarise my modelling and the process that I've gone through, if that would be of use. Otherwise, I'm happy to take questions if there are any clarifications that you would like.
Right, do you have any questions, Crystal?
I've read the evidence, but I just... You talk about the distinction between yourself and other experts in the field being around the assumptions that differ between the experts.
As far as modelling goes, yes.
As far as modelling goes, yep. And I really just want you to take me through those differences, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure.
Sort of step by step, so I've clearly understood what they are.
Okay. So, as far as I'm aware, my modelling exercise is the only one that's been done for the current planned hearings, but there have been a number of other hearings in different jurisdictions, so to take you briefly through those, my model uses retail trade survey information from Statistics New Zealand. That's a common, that's used by all the other consultants as well. We divide total retail sales between tourists, households and businesses. The division between those can differ slightly. My model tends to put a slightly higher lower weighting on households and higher on business. I wouldn't expect that to make any real difference in this case. We all tend to use a 1% growth rate, which is to say that for a constant number of households or businesses, you expect spending per household or business to rise by 1% per year. So that's a reasonably accepted assumption. I think it's conservative, so I pointed out in my evidence, but that is the assumption I've used. What else? Some consultants, I believe, Tim Heath of Property Economics, although he says that he uses a 1% spending growth rate, he then essentially makes a reduction to that growth rate, which he says is necessary to account for the shift to online shopping, and therefore that retailers won't need as much floor space in the future. I don't use that assumption. I don't think there's strong evidence for it, and store-based sales have increased by at least the factor I've used historically, so that's what I stuck with.
What about allowing for sort of some level of understanding of change in that space in the sort of near to intermediate term?
So we tend to hold, for example, the split between large format retail and small format retail, we assume that stays constant. And in terms of the real volume of sales, i.e. the real amount of product sold, I hold that constant as a constant dollar sales per square metre factor. At least one other consultant, I believe it's Mr. Heath, I may be incorrect on that, also applies a factor for increasing sales per square metre over time. I can't remember exactly what factor he uses. I think it's of the order of 1% or less. And my position on that is that it's not justified. Over the last 10 or 20 years, there's been a shift towards large format retail, so on average, retail space has become less productive per square metre. And also, for the data that exists, for example, on supermarkets and department stores, there's no historical track record of increasing real sales per square metre over time. So my position is to leave that constant in real terms. And likewise, to assume that large format versus small format grow at the same rate.
And about the the point you're making about modelling, have you, did you engage in conversation direct with Mr. Heath about what modelling he utilised for the various opinions he expressed?
No, I haven't. It hasn't been outlined in his evidence, so I would assume that he hasn't repeated a new modelling exercise.
Okay. If he hasn't done that, do you know what modelling that you referred to that had been completed in sort of other hearings and whatnot that he relies on?
So, I'm not sure as to whether he relies on modelling, but a number of consultants, which I believe included Mr. Heath, were involved in the three parts plan change some years ago. So that's the 2009, which I refer to in places. So modelling exercises were certainly done for that. RCG, my company, did one, and I believe Mr. Heath also did one. And I believe even a third company did one as well.
Right. Now, you're saying you're unsure about whether Mr. Heath has relied on modelling for the opinions that he's expressed, particularly around the floor area that we're talking of.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't rely on modelling, then what do you understand the basis of his opinions to be?
I don't want to put words into his mouth, but I would assume that he's basing that off his retail experience around New Zealand and his prior experience for Queenstown Wanaka from those previous hearings.
Mm-hmm. And for a layperson to understand, what in your own words is the key critical points of difference between yourself and Mr. Heath?
Well, as far as Mr. Heath's evidence goes, he doesn't refer specifically to the Gordon site. He suggests that a floor space tenancy cap be put in place across the zone. So that's 300 square metres is what he recommends.
Yep, for retail.
Yep. For retail, yes. And I suggested that, for one thing, that creates a gap between some of the existing definitions used in the plan with the 300 versus the 400. So large format for three parts is defined as 400, and it's harder for I think there's limits on the number of smaller tenancies that can locate there, at least initially. As far as the 300 versus 400, I think he mentions that there's not a lot of different retailers which would occupy that 300 to 400 band, but whether that's the case or not, I think the definition should be kept consistent, as there may be businesses that slip through the cracks otherwise. So that's really the only recommendation of Mr. Heath that relates to this site. I've mentioned that because of that tenancy size cap, it's implied that he wouldn't, unless he had been questioned further on the matter, he would not support a supermarket on the site. But he doesn't go into that in detail. I have looked at this particular site in more detail, and this, of course, has been the thrust of my evidence, and I believe that it is justifiable and desirable that a tenancy such as a supermarket should be provided for in that location. And Mr. Heath did also talk about office tenancy caps across the zone, and if that's the case, then I would say, as I said in my evidence, that I don't think there needs to be a cap on office tenancies, and if so, it should be set at 400, the same as I recommend to retail.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, on that large roof, I didn't see too much of the mention of the need for office space within retail premises. So, for example, your office manager and that kind of thing. Is that included in your proposed 400 square metre?
I'm assuming it's office as per the district plan definitions or the proposed definitions. So I gave an some examples of the types of business that would be captured in office. I'm not necessarily thinking about, you know, a white-collar office, but there's real estate agents and travel agents and other businesses such as that which would often occupy retail space rather than, you know, more commercial office space, which could be on another floor or lower floor or in a out-of-the-way location.
Okay, sorry, I think I've been clear with my question. If you've got a retail store, and that retail store has an office area out the back for staff, that would be included within that total area that you're suggesting for retail space?
Yes, it would be, yes. So I would normally look at the overall activity of the business, so that would be the total leasable space occupied by that retailer, or the gross floor area. And so that would include any offices and other, you know, other back-of-house space.
Okay, so that's included in your modelling of the total income per square metre?
Yes.
Point 21, about the average household size tends to decrease over time.
Mm-hmm.
What's the current rate in terms of households?
The New Zealand average is 2.7. 2.7 people per household. For Wanaka specifically, I may have mentioned that figure in my evidence. I don't know it off the top of my head, sorry.
And why would you suggest that it's going to continue to decrease?
So there are two reasons why the average number of people per household has been decreasing and is expected to continue to decrease. The first is that people are having fewer children, so that's a driver. And second is that people are living longer. So, in particular, there's strong growth of the number of empty nester type households. That's the fastest growing type of household. And the trend across New Zealand, and also across most other developed countries, has been towards declining household sizes. The one exception, funnily enough, is Auckland, where it stayed very constant at about 3 people per household for the last several censuses, which I view as being a sign of a housing undersupply in that case.
You don't see any possible future scenarios where that might change for this area as well?
It's certainly a possibility. It's the nature of these projections is that they're based on an extrapolation of historic trends. So there is a pretty long established trend towards the smaller sizes, and that's been observed across a number of countries and most cities. And it's actually been going for a number of decades. So, I mean, you know, the post-World War II baby boomer households were very large, and you've had a kind of a slowly decreasing over time, fast at first and slowly over the last few years. And so the expectation is that will continue.
Thank you. And one last question in terms of the discussion about the relationship with the town centre and three parks. There wasn't much discussion about the mixed business zone that's being proposed. How do you see the sort of complementary or non-complementary activity happening out in the shopping centre, sorry, shopping centre area.
Sorry, so to just clarify, which is the mixed business zone, sorry?
There's an area up above the town centre here and Anderson Heights.
Right, okay. So I haven't looked strongly at that zone. I am familiar with Anderson Heights. It's got the Smith City and I think the Mitre 10 at the moment. My understanding is that that zone was not really conceived as a retail location. It's become more one for de facto reasons. Certainly the Mitre 10 would be likely to move to Three Parks, given that the developer of Three Parks owns the Mitre 10 franchise, I believe, and would want to open a larger store. The mixed business zone, that's correct, that I haven't considered as a detail in my evidence. I see it as it's not really a retail centre location. It's and I wouldn't expect that it would evolve that way, although I haven't seen the current planning rules for that zone.
Well, the sort of number of the retail outlets up there currently would be about the size that you'd be looking at. So.
Right.
Okay. So I can thank you. Just looking at paragraph 67 when you're talking about your model overview. And you allocate retail sales data. Do you allocate that based on household expenditure patterns or just on a direct relationship?
So at the national level we've got the retail trade survey, which is the sales reported by retailers, and then there are separate data sources that I use to separate out households, businesses and visitors. So for tourism, I use the Tourism Satellite Account, which is another Stats New Zealand publication. For households, it's based on the Household Economic Survey, which is an expenditure pattern survey, and then everything that's left is by allocated businesses.
So when you identify using the household economic data, and you then dealing with that by the decile group, expenditure or just for the regional data?
It's based on household income as a percentage of the national average.
The decile?
Well, the decile...
They divide into 10.
They do also divide into 10, but they don't divide the deciles by the type of score. They divide it by the type of item bought, which is slightly different. So I find it more convenient to use this type of store since my model is based on store types. So the national average household spending pattern, I then take the national median household income and I just apply a percentage factor at the catchment income side or other. So in this case it's very similar.
Is that where in paragraph 79, you said household and catchments with incomes 20% higher than the national median of spending. Is that based on reality? Isn't all the economic data that the higher income brackets spend less on goods and save more or spend more on services?
They definitely spend more on most product types. You could argue that the adjustment should maybe be non-linear.
Well, that's the point of my question. You've got a linear adjustment.
I do. But in this case, the national median is essentially identical to the Wanaka income. So there's almost no adjustment. In fact, it's actually a very small balance one. And I've noted in points 81 to 84 that that's quite likely to be conservative.
Yes, in paragraph 83, is that data based on where the expenditure occurs or where the household resides?
It's based on where the household resides.
So how do you know that the expenditure occurs in one place?
You certainly don't, and my entire modelling doesn't say where the retail spending is done. It's based on the location of the household.
Right.
With the exception of tourism spending, which is based on tourism spending in that location. Consultants do sometimes, we do sometimes try to estimate where the spend is coming from and going to, and do what we call a leakage study, or if spend leaking from one area to another. I haven't done that in this case.
Would you expect there to be much leakage?
Very substantial leakage, yes. At the moment, Wanaka really has the town centre and a few shops in Anderson Heights. And I would mention that a large share of spending goes to Queenstown.
In paragraph 90, you have there a table. Am I correct that this is the demand for floor space provided purely from tourism? What demands the tourists from department stores in Wanaka?
That is a very good question.
Ignoring the fact we don't have one.
Yes.
We have a very small one.
So essentially the spending by tourists, it's not provided at the full level of detail that we have for households and businesses. So the data from MBIE, which is Regional Tourism Estimates that I use here, it does provide spending on food and beverage services and on food retailing. And then it gives an overall figure for all other retail. So I apportion that between different store types. I have some evidence for that at a national level. For example, they do separate our clothing, footwear and personal accessories, and recreational goods as well. I assume that there's no spending in furniture, floor coverings, etc., and hardware as well, and general household bulky goods. So I assume that there isn't spending in those categories. And then what remains is divided between different categories.
Yes, that helps, because the following paragraph seems to imply that there is some unfulfilled demand for department stores from tourists. But am I to understand that what you're saying is there are some categories which may be satisfied by other types of stores, such as clothing stores or recreational equipment stores?
Yes, it certainly could be. It's not possible to, at least with limitations of the data that I have, it's not possible to say specifically which stores tourists are spending.
And could you just clarify on the table across the page, is that from direct tourism expenditure that's based on?
So this is the table below point 93?
Yes.
So that is the modelled floor space demands in 2028. So what I've done there is I've taken the 2016 base figure, and then I have, well, I've divided that between domestic and international, which is split out in the data. and I've grown quotas on the different rates. So I've used a range of domestic growth rates from 1 to 3% and for international from 1 to 4%. So there's a wide range of sensitivities there. And then I've just put a box around the assumptions that I call my preferred assumptions, which is 2% growth for domestic and 3% for international.
My question was whether it's direct tourism expenditure. Is that
yes, it's tourists and by tourists, yes.
Right. Thank you.
It might also be helpful to clarify one of the things in my modelling, which is that I essentially did the tourist part completely separately than the households and businesses part. Households and businesses is based on 2013 census counts, updated to 2016 and subsequent years, based on projected growth since then. So I mentioned in a couple of places that that has been lower than the actual growth recorded over 2013 to 2016, so that's why I said those projections are conservative so far. Whereas for tourism spending, I've used the latest available tourism spending data, which is the year to June 2016. So my tourism modelling uses a base year of 2016, and the other modelling uses a base year of 2013, essentially.
Right. Now, I just wondered, in your evidence, was I correct in understanding that you were suggesting that the Wanaka Town Centre should be the focus for tourists?
Yes, that was a point I picked up on from the Dermot February 2014 report. But certainly what has already been observed in Queenstown is that the town centre has evolved as a very strong tourist hub, as opposed to locals would also shop there, but the retail that's developed at Frankton Flats has a more local oriented focus, and the town centre has more of a tourism focus.
So you agree with that?
I agree with that. I think that Frankton Flats is arguably oversupplied for retail.
And I'm just wondering then whether your comment in paragraph 176 about fashion stores on Grand Valley Road might actually be inconsistent with that view.
No, I wouldn't say it's inconsistent. I'd say that although there may be a more tourism focus in the town centre, and there may be a more local focus in, for example, the Gordon site and probably three parks for that matter, that's not to say it's 100% one way or the other. Certainly in a town like Wanaka, where tourists are perhaps the major influence on spending, and also with the site being surrounded by several accommodation providers and on the main route to Cadrona and to Queenstown for that matter. So it's a heavily trafficked tourist route as well as locals.
Just when you talk about the Cadrona Valley roadside being suitable for a 1,500 square metre supermarket, can you help me? What's the size of the New World in Wanaka?
That's
on a present context.
Yeah. I believe the existing supermarket is about 2,000 square metres.
throughput.
Yeah, which is relatively small on a national scale. It seems to be quite constrained to expand by the size of the property, and they own some of the neighbouring sites, but not all of them, and probably constrained. So I would expect that Three Parks, for example, would have a much larger supermarket when one opens there.
Like this is a Fresh Choice in Queenstown, 1,500 square metres. That's, and that, I'm not giving evidence from the bar, that's recorded in the facility.
Yeah, that's helpful. Yeah. I've walked around there on occasion looking for those.
Yeah. Yeah, that's quite a typical Fresh Choice size.
And in your overall conclusions, are you able to assist us with what you consider should be and would be the total floor area appropriate on that site, on the Federated Valley Road site?
The total floor area that might be...
Say, the total retail floor space, ignore the office because that's much harder to ascertain. Total retail floor space you might think appropriate.
So I haven't looked at an overall cap, and for that matter, the limitations of the site in terms of its shape and so on. I think the site as proposed to be zoned is somewhat in the order of 2 hectares, 27,000 square metres. So I sometimes use as a rule of thumb that a site could develop to a third by the time you get car parking and landscaping. So using that, it could perhaps theoretically develop to 9,000 square metres. In practice, I wouldn't expect it to reach that level, or probably anywhere close to that, since it's likely to include a mix of uses besides retail, and since the shape of the site would probably also have something to say about that.
Now, just finally, I have something clear. Your evidence is focused on the Federated Valley Road site, not the local shopping centre zone overall. So, yeah.
That's correct. So, I haven't commented on Mr. Heath's evidence on One Hanson Road, for example, except to say how I think that might relate to what the issue might be on this one.
Any follow-up questions?
I have, I just want to talk about the McDermott Consultant Report of 2014 with you. In your evidence, you give us a review, if you like, of that 2014 report, and you end up agreeing with those points, you record agreement. And I've gone back and had a bit of a look at the officer report on the issue, and what I take from the officer report is reliance on the McDermott Consultant's report. In particular, in relation to Credona Valley Road not competing with the town centre, and the view emerging from that report that the size of the store should be limited. So, sort of against that context, I'm trying to sort of, you know, understand your view, that you say you agree with the points in the report, yet you seem to be recommending, you know, for a larger size footprint for a small size, mid-sized supermarket. I'm just trying to reconcile that.
So I agree with the tenancy caps in general terms, in both a state of supermarkets and, I say to the two exceptions of 1,500 square metres and 750 square metres, which I would see as respectively a supermarket and perhaps some other kind of store, which is not within the types of stores that I've also supported being excluded.
So, yeah, in terms of the McDermott report, it didn't go into detail on store types. So it didn't consider, for example, whether a supermarket on the site might be a good idea or whether it's not. It just talked about tenancy caps in general terms. So my support for a supermarket on the site is based on the growth across Wanaka, which I think just might increase supermarkets in the future, kind of making the best of what it is already, the kind of established commercial hub.
So, expressed another way, are you saying it's the type of store that's critical? And secondly, are you saying the type of store you are supporting in terms of a larger gross floor area will not cause issues for the existing Wanaka Town Centre?
Yes, that's correct. So I see supermarkets as being convenience, convenience retail in a sense, but it's shopping that's done on a very regular basis. You go for your weekly shop, maybe more often. And so that for one thing makes it quite different than other kinds of large format retail, which are primarily driven by comparison shopping or by a low price, wide offering kind of arrangement. So I do see supermarkets as being distinct from that perspective.
And the other sort of larger type store, what did you have in mind when you were writing your evidence about the type of store?
I mentioned very briefly in point 215. That I would see that as being potentially a recreational goods retailer. So that would sell and probably hire as well ski equipment, mountain bike equipment, things like that, which do have a much higher utilisation or demand probably in Wanaka and Queenstown than you may have in a typical non-tourist town.
Okay. And would I be right in thinking that the supermarket that's going to serve the needs of, if you like, households or locals as distinct from tourists?
Primarily, certainly tourists will also, especially domestic tourists, will also often have kind of self-catered accommodation, and they'll make their own food, right, to some extent.
And the other store, the recreational goods retailer, and the high reach of recreation equipment, again, how does that sort of link with the different subsets you've identified, households and tourists?
It's a bit of both, really. Certainly from the limited number of people I know down here, they do tend to be quite into their outdoor activities as well, probably more than a typical New Zealand resident who probably lives in a big city at this point. I would think a store like that would appeal to both households and to tourists, whereas the supermarket would have more of a focus on households.
Okay. And then, for the sake of repeating myself, your expert view was that a supermarket of the size you've commented on and this other type of store wouldn't have adverse effects on the Wanaka Town Centre in terms of leakage.
Yes, that's my view, yes.
Right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Poppy.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much.
You've already successfully blunted a comment I was going to make about council not really appreciating the growth that we're the growth pressures that we're under, but good on you for going out there. Yeah. Good afternoon, and thank you again for allowing us to appear, and to Commissioner Ella Lawton. Alan knows the process and that we've worked through as a community. And Paul, I think we've presented one of our other submissions to you some time ago. Again, this is most of our submissions we kept fairly straightforward, real bread and butter type issues. And so we're here today, we haven't got any additional information, and some of the presentations that we've made at the panel, we brought additional information. No, we're here simply to talk to this document as is. I'm just introduce Paul Cunningham. He is the chair of the HCA. I'm been put out for pastor. I'm the immediate past chairman. And some 2 years ago, when the proposed district plan surfaced, several of us on HCA, and HCA as a committee, picked up nods from our mayor and our deputy mayor and our councillors, and get the hardware community involved. So we decided, yes, we would exercise some leadership, and we did everything we could, A, to get the community to be aware of the proposed district plan. That was hard work, I might say, to get people to actually get into the district plan. But anyhow, we had a series of seminars, community seminars, amazingly well attended. I was staggered at some of those seminars. I see Ella nodding on fine Saturday mornings, coming along and saying to my wife, if we get 25, it'll be successful. And we're at 100, 120, 125, big numbers turned up. So we were successful in that we got the community to talk. At the very first seminar, we had my mind's gone blank, is it Matthew?
Pets.
Yeah, Pets. We actually had some of the council staff that were actually leading it to actually speak and talk us through the proposed district plan. So anyhow, that's where we come from. And in some ways we were not successful. We were encouraging individuals and groups to actually participate in the submission process. In some ways we didn't achieve much there, so many didn't. But the HCA has picked up on the key findings and views and grizzles of our community, and we presented, I think, 5 submissions. So we're just repeating strong stuff that came through in those seminars. In total, we like this policy. We like the local shopping centre zone, so we are affirming that policy. We give it the big tick. Our real concern is that we're saying that council, and on a number of areas, and some of them will come up in phase 2, the proposed district plan indicates to us that the planners on that wrote it and council weren't really tapped in to the great growth pressures that Hawea is under. Now sure, that document, I take it, was probably been written 2 to 3 years ago, and we're really facing pressures over there now. Rachel Brown, and I actually meant to do some work into council stats, but I haven't done it, I've been busy with other things, keeps telling me that the growth in the Hawea district is at the top of the list of any district in the QLDC. Now, I know that was the case between the last two census. We were away up where the highest growth rate, whether we're still there, but nonetheless, we've been under considerable growth pressures for a good period of time. So again, thank you for going up there. And again, one of the best things is just to look at our primary school there. If you went over to Hawea Flat, many people speed past the school and think it's a tiny little school. When I worked for the Ministry of Education some 12 years ago, it was a small school. There were three classrooms. They now have, I think, 10 classrooms and two more going in there. So the growth in that primary school there is probably one of the best indicators of the growth that we're, growth pressures that we're facing. So, in sum total, our submission is we support the contents and provisions of Chapter 5, Chapter 15, noting that the local shopping centre zone policy should provide some well-managed growth and development of small commercial and business activities in the Lake Hawea Township. Responding to pressures that came initially from the couple that operate one of the key businesses, Sales. It's like the general store, it's a cafe, it's a restaurant up the top. They were the first to bring it to council's, to HCA's attention that there was not enough provision made for growth, and they kept telling me they had people coming in and saying, who owns the land around here? We represented that to council, and planners, when they were writing this policy, came out and they spoke with the property owners around there, and this policy emerged. So we're saying we like it. We're just suggesting that it become larger, and we've identified two properties there. They're between Sales, the cafe, and the tennis courts, which immediately behind the tennis courts is the Hawea Community Centre. And then we've got the park, what is the park called? We've got, but anyhow, it makes sense to proceed along there. So we're just suggesting, and we did wonder whether the proposed shopping centre zone should go that way, but everyone seems to say we move along Capel Avenue.
Peter Fraser.
Yeah.
Mr. Hughes,
yes.
We're not here to discuss the extension of the zone, and you'll get the opportunity to do that next year in June.
We're
just here to talk about the rules for the zone.
Yeah.
And so, and you were telling us that you're happy with.
We support the policy, and in our submission, we're just saying to council, think bigger. And I assume that was part of your deliberations as a panel, that you would consider our recommendation in the sub. So really, that's really what we're speaking to.
Okay.
Lastly, just the last thing that we have as a HCA spoken to the property owners of the two properties that we're recommending be included in an enlarged shopping centre zone. They have copies of this. We've discussed the thinking, etc. And they're quite accepting. They can see where we're coming. One of them was somewhat surprised, but so we've been good citizens that we've spoken there. So I may have come along here on a misunderstanding. I thought we could actually speak to our recommendation too, but it's in the sub, and that's where we are.
Okay.
Paul, is there anything you would like
to? No, just to reiterate everything Dennis said. Our town's changing fast, and that things need to happen.
Thank you both for coming along and for all the work that you've put in. The particularly interesting bring up the growth projections in table 4.4.1. You're suggesting that the growth rates are even higher than what's been proposed in the table now?
Did you on your drive this morning, did you go around the backside of the Hawea to go down the main track?
And then along the waterfall,
and then along the back. Then behind the main drive of Hawea, the next subdivision is being done now.
I did a visit with Commissioner Lawrence about a month ago. The next set of hearings to deal with the zoning size, introducing them to the area.
Just to come back to your question, yes, no, we say the statistics are there. but we see it on a daily basis. And one of the things for this shopping centre zone, local shopping centre zone too, in terms of Wanaka, and I understand Arrowtown and Queenstown, council has access to lots of data. There's no real data collected out of Hawea, and we've set about trying to collect data, but we haven't done a good job. But you've probably seen it this morning, you just see the number of cars and tourists on a daily basis. And what I have felt when I speak not to our local councillors but others in council, they smile benignly and they seem to have a picture that Hawea is picking over quite nicely. But there's a lot of pressure on, in terms of growth pressure, tourism pressures, etc., that the data isn't there, but we see it every day with the numbers and the parking and the people down on the beach, etc. Plus, the building program is really starting to build up ahead of steam, the houses and the number of new families that are moving in. So I would imagine that over the next 5 to 6 years, we will see some real growth, we'll see some activity in the shopping centre zone as proposed in the district plan.
So I guess that was my other question, was if you ever the ground is on the ground local, have you heard of any talk of there being activity on that land? Because sales has been there for quite some time, hasn't it?
Yeah.
So
it's just been sold, by the way. I think if you build it, they'll come sort of, you know what I mean? They won't happen unless we change them.
I am aware that sales have put two or three people onto me. One was an insurance firm that were looking to open an office there, and I pointed out this policy, they were aware of it, etc. I think we'll see, and there was another one that came through, a software company wanting to set up out there and set up in hardware and have some sort of facility or base in town. So I think we're going to see a multiplicity of small services targeted at a growing community. I would imagine we'll also see soon, and the people that own sales reckon will see probably more cafes and then a couple of small cafes grow there. I would imagine in the next 10 years this policy will see it in action for the number of small businesses and shopping sites, etc. And we need it and we welcome it.
Yes.
I've become more good. It was a very useful site visit again this morning, and I could recognise many of the points you made both in your written submission and presentation today. I think initially I was wondering about the relativity between people coming permanently and holiday makers, but I think the information you've shared about the school is a good indication of permanent as against visitors, but yes, no, I could recognise the growth rates there and the pressures that they give rise to and the need to provide for those in an appropriate way.
Yes, and I think some time ago, Chairman Dennis floored me with a question. You floored me, you said, is there a change in terms of the permanent residents versus holiday owners, etc.? And I kicked myself because I didn't get the correct answer. We blundered our way through, but I walk around that community every morning. And even this morning I was going there, I can say that there are very, very few holiday homes that don't have people in them all the time. In other words, there's a number now being opened up to the accommodation market, etc. And even where we live, we have our home in Dunedin. There's four or five homes that are all owned, if you like, by absentee landowners. But more and more, there are people in those homes for the bulk of the year. So. And the other thing is, in terms of Timsfield and the subdivisions, they are being populated primarily by young families, the school-aged ones, and one or two older couples like me. So our permanent residence is moving week by week, we're getting more and more permanent residents.
Do you understand what's actually drawing the new residents to the area?
No, I don't. But what I do note, and we do letter drops and I target, my role is to go around to Timsfield and that, and I do letter drops when we're having these seminars. I go and ask people to come. One of the things that interests me is, particularly in Timsfield and elsewhere, the people that buy land and build on it almost to a T. We have very, very few that are grisly. Most of them say it's wonderful. We came here and for 150 or 180,000, we've got a section. We've got a house, and I'll tell you how much they paid. They are delighted with the subdivision. They're delighted with how much it cost them to get in. So there's a lot of young families that I get that feedback. That's why they're there.
Yeah, so the price point is...
It's the price point, I think. It's a big attraction.
All right, no, that's been very helpful.
Yeah. Just the last thing before to the other thing, I didn't say this, but you may or may not appreciate this. What we have in our submissions, and when we have this community process, getting people in and getting them to read and getting them to talk, we have a community plan that was put together with some council support, I think, in 2003. Parts of it are dreadfully out of date, but other parts, in terms of the vision that people have for a community and for young families, etc., are still very pertinent today as they were in 2003. So a lot of our submissions are sort of rooted in this, and we also employed Ian Greaves, who's just left here, soon after he left council, and we got him to, in a sense, update this and point the community where we should be going, if you like, with a more up-to-date community plan. So a lot of what we have sort of comes from that structure, plus getting people along and hearing where they want to go and hearing what their grizzles. So I think the process is fairly well grounded.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
If you hear my questions of this day, could you also check, please, and find... I couldn't find a further submission relating to Willow Ridge.
I did see a further submission,
1.13. Yes. It's not in the section that I have. That must be a problem. Maybe you need to review and email it to me, please.
Yes.
Thanks. We're a minute and a half early. So.
Commissioners, meeting before this is Elliot Goldman, and I'll allow him to introduce himself on behalf of WellSmart, and perhaps you can
right. Sure. Yeah, so just briefly, I'm Elliot Goldman. I'm the New Zealand resident director for WellSmart Investments. They've acquired the sections at 65 and 67 Shotover Street, 5 and 9 Hay Street, and 28 Mann Street, and we've also now unconditionally purchased 30 Mann Street to basically make up that block of land in central Queenstown.
So this is the block that has the Salvation Army down Shotover Street all the way up and adjoins the Mann Street car park, is that correct?
Correct, yes. Yeah. And, obviously what they're keen on doing is building a large-scale hotel with an international brand, obviously doing this in a time where such amenities are in massive demand in Queenstown. The backers of that company have completed a number of other projects in Australia, Singapore, and China. That's essentially the background, and I'm their base in New Zealand. So,
Do you want to just add anything about the timing?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we're looking to move forward as really in the short to medium term. The least of the way things move in other parts of the world, and naturally things don't move quite as quickly here. But obviously that's all for very good reasons. That's basically what they're looking to do.
Commissioner,
I was thinking of the name of the
Sorry, yes. My name is Elliot Goldman.
Right.
Yeah.
Comments I'd like to make to our commissioners, having read other pre-lodge evidence of these submissions. First of all, I'd just like to add one thing that I didn't have in my evidence around the existing environmental context that you should be aware of if you're not already, and that is that there is an existing resource consent for a hotel and retail activities on the Wellsmart land. And it's more or less, it does breach the height limits, but not by much. But the rolling height was applied, and there's a graduated height for that development. And I haven't attached plans because there's lots of them, and we can provide plans if you like, but I just thought it might complicate the matter. That consent expires, or lapses, in July 2017. Although, in my capacity as a consultant planner, Wellsmart have asked me to see if they can give effect to that consent as soon as possible, but they do intend to change the plans and go higher than what has been consented. Just acknowledge that I did not, or John Evans Associates did not prepare the submission for Wellsmart, and it's only recently that we've very recently become involved in providing them with planning advice. Turning to my evidence, I have since read the other evidence provided by Mr. Tim Williams, planning evidence, Boyer and design evidence, Mr. Edmonds, the legal submissions from Mr. Todd on behalf of National Properties, Mr. Goldsmith for McFarlane Investments. Also read the summaries of Ms. Jones' Secretary Bay report, the updates of that and Mr. Church's update.
I think you were there on Thursday.
I was certainly there, except for the child pickup at 3 p.m. I was sort of much I haven't quite got my head around what may or may not have been agreed or implied as being agreed, but certainly picked up that there was a lot of comfort from the panel around the direction or recommendations put up in Mr. Edmonds and Mr. Williams' evidence around applying simplified height process.
Our comments were restricted purely to the language school site,
right,
which of course is at the far end of the block from Wellsmart property.
Yes, and my evidence doesn't go down towards that.
Yeah.
My evidence, I have limited it to the Shotover Street properties, which is, if you're familiar with the diagram in the 42A report and proposed plan, the area E, so my evidence actually doesn't cover all of Wellsmark's land. And it was really focused on two aspects, one's policies and two on the rural framework in terms of height. Firstly, there's been some comments around scope of my evidence. It's come from Ms. Scott in her legal submission for council, and if I recall correctly, she said that my evidence was within scope or seemed to be okay within scope in regard to the rules and the heights, but not in scope in terms of the relief I was recommending in terms of the policies. Mr. Todd presented a legal submission saying that I don't think it was within scope. In my opinion, the amendments to the rules I think are clearly within the scope of the Wellsmart submission. In effect, the Wellsmart submission, which is number 308, sought relief that the rules for the land have no additional controls imposed on development and use beyond those applied to other town centre zone sites. So basically they sought whatever any other landowner has in the town centre zone. And I understand, so that therefore would mean whatever the highest height controls are, that would set the parameters for the scope of the Wellsmart in terms of height. In terms of the policies, the amendments that I've recommended. I believe there is scope, will be called a collective scope, in the submissions by IHG and Watertight Investments, whom Ms. Jones, the Sexwood Road report has also referred to in some instances around amendments to policies. The specific points are 663.5, and that's IHG, and 672.5, and that's Watertight.
That's presuming we accept that someone could rely on someone else's submission. They haven't made a finding on that.
Yeah, well, Commissioner, my opinion as an expert witness is I don't see myself as being limited to what the person I'm representing is.
Right.
Is that combined? Okay. I'm here to assist new commissioners.
Okay.
And, that's what I'm intending to do. So if you determine, in my opinion, that those policies should be amended, and effectively what I'm saying, my evidence is I think they are too narrow. Whether or not their scope is a separate issue, whether or not you think my amendments are appropriate or relative, entirely in your hands. I'll just add, I also think there's broad scope in submission number 20 by Cowley, that I understand we can talk about a bit. And Cowley's submission is also very clear. I took out of it that we have, there should be higher building limits for residential activities and even higher limits for visitor accommodation, including hotels. Commissioners, I'd like to point out a typo in my evidence. That is 9A on page 4. And the last paragraph, the last sentence should be incomplete. It's an incomplete sentence. And now turning to the discussion that I heard in the evidence that I read last week around building heights on the Mann Street block, I felt that, myself included, but no one has really mentioned it to you, or at least drawn to your particular attention, that the ground level at the land owned by Wellsmart, in sort of the western corner, southwestern corner of the Main Street block, is higher than the ground level of the other properties along Shotover. So effectively, if the same height limit is applied across all of the Shotover Street fronting properties, as Mr. Williams is suggesting, then Wellsmart will have a net loss in comparison in terms of how much bulk it can get, unless it carries out earthworks.
Isn't the real issue whether an original ground level can be determined, and just what is your view on that matter on the Wellsmart side?
I think it has been determined, sir. I don't have the evidence with me, but because of the existing source consent, I've seen surveys which were applied. So in terms of the existing environment, it is a recorded matter of fact or unchallenged documentation of files that council holds as to ground levels. The other thing I'd like to add in relation to that is the, I don't think anyone, in terms of the height limits for the Man Street block, has really brought to your attention, or certainly I've mentioned it once in terms of the Crown Plaza building, but Mr. Williams' evidence didn't seem to talk about the importance of the relationship between whatever development occurs on the well site land and then the relationship of Hay Street, which includes then the Crown Plaza, which I understand is also looking to develop and has development rights on the other side of Hay Street. His evidence in particular seemed to focus on the Man Street, elevating up Man Street, not so much down the bottom end or the lower end of the Shotover Street corner, where I understand the Crown Plaza Hotel is around 16 metres high, not necessarily its highest point, but on its near along the Hay Street boundary, and that's 16 metres above existing ground level. So the actual height above Shotover Street, I'm not sure what it is, but it would be more than 16 metres. And so I guess what I'm saying to you, in my opinion, is that there should be some flexibility, and you might be comfortable having a better understanding of me or to what the broader objectives and policies in the proposed district plan will be. I'm just a little, when I reviewed the specific policies relating to building height, I considered them to be quite narrow, and in my experience, there is a risk that if Wellsmart lodges resource consent, that the decision makers may be confined to the prescriptiveness and the specific nature of the height policies in the proposed district plan. And to me, that could be a real consenting risk and an inappropriate risk if the activity status is non-compliant, which it is. And just to add that this may or may not be a particularly relevant when it goes to make a decision, because we are intending on lodging for this consent early in the new year. If there is scope to have this conversation again, then I think Wellsmart and you as commissioners may benefit from whoever this process tracks in terms of Wellsmart knowing exactly what it's proposing and albeit there might be a decision that you may be able to refer to.
I don't think we'll be very helpful there. I think the earliest that our recommendations would go to the council sometime like this time next year, given the time period we're going to have to spend on dealing with the actual site-specific zonings throughout the district. So that may be that if your consent has been lodged early next year, you'll be dealing with just the what was notified anyway.
Yeah, it was more so that we might be able to come back and give you more information as to put more.
Well, certainly within the mapping hearings, presumably we have submissions on that, do you?
Well, smart. Other than retaining the, what we proposed. So, drawing all that together, I do to assist you, and it's not in my evidence, but in terms of the relief I've recommended in maintenance to the height rules, I think the Mr. Jones' recommendation to remove the 17 metre height restriction and replace it with 330 MAs could be appropriate for the WellSmart plan. And below that, potentially a restricted discretionary activity clause above 12 metres, which I think is would allow the effects of height to be assessed underneath that 330 MASL, which is above the height I understand Main Street Properties is looking for, because it'll block their views. But my evidence recommended that the height of it go from 12 metres to 15 metres, and I think if that was a restricted discretionary regime.
So you're thinking a 3 metre beam regime?
Which would be consistent with what's already applied in, or proposed to be applied in brief, is that the P1, the 12 metre height limit, is a restricted discretionary above that, and not applying above 15.
Do you have any particular thoughts around wording of the policy that you're concerned about? You know, like you've made mention of the point that going above the height limit is non-compliant, and you're concerned that if that status was retained, that might be difficulties in getting through at least one of the gateways.
Yes, well, I have recommended some amendments to two specific policies. I found all the amendments I recommended to be within scope, and I can reference those with an exception. And there is an exception, and that was in terms of the amendment I had, policy 12.225, I recommended the first part of that be split into an and an or. And I can't see the correct scope for that. But I think, at least in terms of WellSmart's position, there is direct relief for the offsetting and compensation. And I may be interpreting the proposed policies wrong, but what WellSmart is anticipating, and now is able to do, having recently acquired the top corner, which is 30 Main Street, has had three frontages, and there is a significant opportunity for good public benefits, but those benefits may not be within the site. For example, if you take the example that the current Brecon Street steps were constructed along with the Sofitel hotel development, and more or less a compensation or an offset, I believe this would be entirely appropriate to ensure that any benefits that WellSmart present the public or the decision maker that are off-site be taken into consideration in terms of any additional height that might be proposed. the way I read the policies, it seems quite specific in the criteria that you'll only, with a non-functionary status, you'll only be consistent, or you might be contrary to those specific policies if you're not reducing height elsewhere within the site, or if you're not achieving superior urban design outcomes within the site. And it may just be the way I'm reading it, and as commissioners, you have the opportunity to clarify how you intend that policy to be.
So there you're particularly concerned about sort of, can I use the phrase, that sort of that off-site kind of off-seats being taken into account, is that what you want?
Yes, very much so.
So you want that built into the assessment criteria?
Yes, by way of inclusion in the policy.
And I wasn't clear, this is just sort of pretty, to get clear in my mind, you talked about a proposal being advanced to utilise the current resource consent, but then later you talked about a new resource consent for a proposal coming forward. I just wasn't quite clear.
No, that's what we're working through now, sir.
Right.
Is can any of the existing resource consent
be utilised?
Be given a bit. To allow WellSmart to proceed as soon as they possibly can. But now that they've acquired this additional land, they are wanting to effectively change the final product.
Change the design.
Mm.
Okay. And at this stage, you don't have a clear understanding of the actual height of what might be proposed, what the proposal might be.
I've seen initial drafts, and we're talking substantial encroachment of the high standards in the proposed plan.
Okay, so substantial exceedance of those
yes.
numbers?
Yes.
And that would put you into a non-compliant status?
Well above, yes, non-compliant. And yes, very much. Blows it out of order.
Okay, all right. No, thank you.
Covered everything that I had. Thank you very much. I'll adjourn to 3:30.